Mark Stein's Q&A begins live across the planet in 5 minutes. Mark Stein's Clubland Q&A begins at the top of the hour, live across the planet. Mark Stein Club live Q&A begins at Stein Online in 3 minutes. The Mark Stein Club live Q&A starts in just 2 minutes, right here. Stein Online's live Clubland Q&A is just 1 minute away. The Mark Stein Club Q&A begins in 45 seconds. Mark Stein Club Q&A, live around the planet, begins in 30 seconds. The Stein Online Clubland Q&A begins right now.
Hey everyone, good afternoon, and welcome to another fabulous episode, another extremely interesting and scintillating version of the Mark Stein Club live Q&A around the planet. As you have already noticed, I'm sure, it is not Mark Stein doing this Clubland live Q&A. It is your favorite, well, your only in-house uppity Jewish mother. It is Laura Rosen Cohen, and I am coming at you live at 3 o'clock Eastern time. You will definitely not get any more time recitations. That is the only time that I am going to let you know about, because otherwise it will be way too much overload for my mom brain. So here we are. It's a live Q&A. It is Wednesday, April the 9th, 2025. And you guys are stuck with me for the next hour and change, because Mark and crew, as you know, are on the fabulous Mark Stein cruise. Mark and the gang, all his VIP guests and all the cruisers from all over the world have met up in Europe, and they are sailing the seas, having a fantastic time. There have been tons of receptions, lots of meet and greets and live shows among all the day trips that they've been able to do throughout Europe. So a great time has been had by all so far, and we're looking forward to a lot more info about the cruise, and the shows will be posted in the coming days and weeks. And you can always get little tidbits about what is happening at sea by following Mark's X account. There have been little updates hither and yon. So that is where we are at. I am honored to be here. I am infinitely grateful to Mark Stein for tolerating me and for letting me play in his sandbox and speaking to you guys for the next hour. You guys are, for better or for worse, going to get a double dose of me this week. There will be the live Q&A that we're doing now, and a regular scheduled batch of Laura's links is going to be coming out tomorrow as well. Let's see, what else have we got to get to just in our little intro? You know, Mark and company are on the cruise, but I am sure that they have already heard a little bit about what is going on with Trump tariffs. And every minute, every hour, there is just something more interesting and more delicious going on. Just before we came on air, I noticed that there was a little bit of breaking news about how Trump is truly putting the screws to China, and it's pretty glorious. So I think that, what were the rates before an hour ago? The tariff rate on China was like 104% or something like that, and it's gone up dramatically, obviously. And I also saw something really funny on X. Maybe we'll try to post it later. Kevin O'Leary, who suggested that the tariffs on China should be 400%. He was talking about how, as somebody who does business in China, how they steal intellectual property, they lie, you can't take anybody to court, and he's sick and tired of it. And he made a really good case for why the tariffs on China should be even higher than Trump's regularly scheduled ones. I'm sure we'll see a little bit more news coming out throughout the hour about that as well. And, you know, guys, it's only 3 o'clock Eastern time. I don't know where everybody is in the world who's listening, but, even at 3 o'clock, I feel like as an adult, it could be time to take a nap already. Just taking a little sip of water. Naps are definitely one of those things that I made fun of my parents, sadly, excuse me, when I was a child. I thought that was like genuinely such a truly old person's thing to do. I also remember kind of snickering that they had to go to bed so early. Early in my mind, as a rotten teenager was like 10 o'clock at night, and I'm really happy some days if I get to 10 o'clock at night without being really exhausted. So I'm wondering, maybe we'll open it up to some questions. Have you guys become your parents at all? Anything that you've become that you thought you wouldn't, and you hear yourself saying things that your parents did, or are there any things that were habitual about your parents or generally about older persons that you do yourself now? When did that start happening to you? I'm kind of interested. I have a little laundry list of stuff that I've noticed about myself as I get older. So if you guys are listening, drop in your comments. As you know, anybody around the world can listen for free to our live Q&A, but only members of the Mark Stein Club can pop their questions into the comment section and generally make comments on Mark's posts and the other columns that come up on Stein Online. So if you haven't already invested in a membership, I highly recommend that you do so. You will meet, quote unquote, meet really interesting people from all over the world, lots of great and interesting perspectives. It's definitely one of the only clubs that I would be a member of. And also, if you haven't already considered it, if you haven't already been on a Mark Strine cruise, highly recommend that as well. My family and I were on one Mark Strine cruise, the cruise to Alaska. It was absolutely delightful, and one of the best things, aside from the shows and the atmosphere on the ship and just the whole cruising experience, obviously, is being with so many people from around the world who are like-minded, politically, even religiously, and it's just a real treat to meet people, other normals from all over the world. So, if you are not on board this year, definitely keep your eyes peeled for information about the next cruise and book early. These things sell out. Now, having said all that, we definitely have some great questions already that have come up. I was taking a little peek behind the curtain earlier, so we have some good stuff. So I thank you all for your questions and comments already. And I will make one last note before we get into the thick of things. I have mentioned that my home studio is a little cramped at the best of times. I am not in my regular home studio again. Last time I did the Q&A, my special needs son and Mr. C were in the atmosphere, and that is why, if you listen carefully, you will hear my darling husband Mr. C crunching on some snacks for a few minutes till we figured out how sensitive the mic was, and my special needs son, who was very quiet, making some of his tired Sorry, he was very tired and he was making his tired noises, which somebody pointed in the comments sounded like moaning, and I had to reassure everybody that everything was completely kosher and fine. So, on the odd chance that we have any interruptions like a weird sounding YouTube video, music, or mini moaning from my mini me or crunching, we'll take care of that right away. But that's just a heads up that is my domestic background now. Okay. We have a lot to get to. We are already 8 minutes into our program. So let's see who has popped in a comment already. Okay, we have here Steve from Manhattan. Hi, Laura. I am writing with greetings from the outrageously delightful Mark Stein Cruise, and I have a question about funding international cruises. That's cute. Given the organizations that have been on the receiving end of US aid or USAID disbursements of US taxpayers' money, I think it's a reasonable assumption that many millions of dollars have paid for luxury cruises for the Democrat NGOs. What do you think about having all Stein Club members receive reparations in the form of fully paid staterooms on, say, the next five Stein cruises? Many club members hail from Canada, Europe, and elsewhere, so the grants could be fairly characterized as, quote, international development. Well, Steve, first of all, we're all very jealous that you are prancing around the wonderful, I was going to say deck top, the deck, not the deck top, God, I mean, I used to consider myself a bit of a Julie McCoy cruise director type of person, but now I can't even remember what each of the levels are called. Anyways, we are all very happy and jealous of you that you are writing to us from the cruise. I think your request is completely reasonable, and maybe you should, reach out to like Elon or to Doge and see if we can get that happening. On a serious note, it really is just incredible, the extent to which, yes, your taxpayer dollars, Americans, were used to fund the grift and to make so many people on the left wing take so wealthy. And for them, it's like an existential fight now because all their toys are being taken away, all their sources of income, which was stolen from you. So you can understand the really pent up anger and rage that is being directed at Elon Musk and Doge and any attempts for efficiencies because your money was very helpful to all these people to get rich. So I think we're going to see many more tantrums and lots of bad behavior in the future about this. And every story that comes out is just worse than the next. Trump pulled a few crazy stories when he did, was it the State of the Union or another public address? And he talked about some of the incredible waste, these really kooky stories. And there's a guy I follow on X. He goes by the handle of Oil Field Rando. I don't know much about him, but if you follow him on X, formerly known as Twitter, you will see that he spends quite a bit of time digging into a lot of the wasteful grants. So it's absolutely outrageous. I'm really glad that a lot of this is making it to the public light. And obviously, in an ideal world, government waste would be like a nonpartisan win-win for everybody. But really, the brains of the left in America are so broken that because they think basically anything that they think is anti-Trump, they will root for, even if it's the most disgusting thing possible, like not rooting for a kid who got over brain cancer. So, anyways, Steve, I've totally gone in circles on your question, but yes, great idea to subsidize Mark Stein Cruises. I am all for that. Definitely, we should call it reparations. That's excellent. Maybe we should start a movement like All Cruisers Matter, something like that. We can talk about it. We could merch that. We're definitely gonna see a lot more crybaby and terrible behavior as waste continues to be exposed. Okay. Woo, we got a whole bunch now. Let us take this question from Olga from Arizona. Olga says, I have always firmly been in the pro-nap camp. I would nap at lunch, at work, and I car nap during road trips. Naps are glorious. Whoa, Olga. Oh my God, you are next level napping. Like, really, that is like my life goals. To nap over lunch at work, like I can't imagine anything better than that. I cannot do that. Like, I can't nap on demand like that or in public places. Mr. C, he is blessed with the like Instanap ability. I think that might be because maybe it's like an army thing. Anybody who's served in an army, he was in the Israeli army. Like, once you close your eyes and you want to sleep, it's just like boom. So I agree with you that naps are glorious, and I aspire to your level of nap skill. Thanks for that comment. We'll see what other comments we get on the in the nap realm. Okay, moving right along. Oh, we've got a question here from Thomas Rossi, who says, "Hi, Laura. Always nice to hear you are guest hosting." Well, thank you kindly. What do you make of the attacks on Elon Musk and on Teslas? Do you think this is an ad hoc campaign or something more organized? So, thank you, Thomas, for that question. I definitely thought we were going to get some Elon questions. I saw something on X again, because that's where I get a lot of my news from, obviously, about the extent to which these attacks on Teslas is not organic, not ad hoc, and it's very well funded. And I'm trying to think of who it was. I'm positive I have that in the links tomorrow. There's a journalist. His name is, I'm probably going to screw up the pronunciation. It's Mario Tawal, something like that. He's got like a gazillion followers, and I have no idea where he's from. But anyways, he posted information about how organized it was, and that these Tesla protesters are getting paid hourly or $200 a day, and that there were buses, and so there's nothing that is organic about it. I also saw Elon Musk on TV talking about how he knew that it was not organic, and how he knew who was organizing these protests, and that they were going to get to the bottom of it, and kind of, I guess, that it's going to be criminal investigations. So I hope that that is the case, because obviously, it's disgraceful, the violence, and it's basically, it's domestic terrorism, right? And I just saw a story that there was a pregnant woman in a Tesla who in Vancouver. So obviously this madness is happening all over North America, and I think she was injured. I think the baby is okay, but hurting people in their cars, this can be deadly, and that's what they want. They're like, they're really into violence, and somebody is going to get killed if they don't rein in this newest iteration of leftist violence. And of course, it's because they can't use their words, these people, so they use their fists, and they're just angry, belligerent people, low IQ, low information. And I really do hope that people are arrested. Perhaps you guys think otherwise. You can always let me know in the comments here. By the way, if you are not a member of the Mark Stein Club, which you should be by now, and if you're just listening and you have a comment, you can definitely still get in touch with me via the inbox at the club, or on X at Laura Rosen Cohen. And yeah, that's the way to make a comment, even if you're not a member. So let's move on to another question. We've got one from, oh, here we go. We have Chris Davies. Hello, Chris. Laura, I hope you are well. The case of Livia Tosici Bolt, who was found guilty of being inside an abortion buffer zone with a sign saying, quote, "Here to talk if you want," end quote, is the latest punch to the solar plexus of Christendom. Thankfully, crowdfunding has raised her £20,000 sterling fine. Given the UK's deathbed birth rate, and in parenthesis, he says Islam aside, of course, and the fact that we kill more than 4,000 fetuses a week, is it fair to say that the passing of abortion legislation was the top of the slippery slide that we are now almost at the bottom of? Keep well, Laura. I should note that Chris is writing from the United Kingdom. I think you're in England, if I recall. There's a lot in there. So, look, every news story that comes out about the curtailing of freedom of speech in the UK, freedom of religious observance, freedom of association, the stories of the rape gang investigations being buried, the police being on the side of the rapists and the groomers, the knife crimes, banning knives. It's so crazy at this point, and I've said for a long time that I'm not really optimistic about the United Kingdom, obviously, because mostly Mark Stein demographic gloom and doom. Like, now the population is such that it's like an irreversible situation there. So that obviously is combined with tremendous anti-Christian behaviors, and officialdom is against Christianity in the United Kingdom, and King Charles is not exactly the person who is going to be standing up for Christendom, unfortunately. He will stand up for trees. He will pack Ramadan dates into little boxes, But he's not going to stand up for the church. So all of these things are just further drip drip to let you know where you're headed in the United Kingdom. And it's it is a depressing situation. It's very sad. I think that even when there are people who have a lot of moxie and are willing to speak up, to wit, let's say Tommy Robinson, he's in jail in isolation, more days in isolation than any Muslim jihadi terrorist in the United Kingdom. Katie Hopkins, they tried to destroy her. Tried, she's still around, but not everybody is as plucky as her. So anybody who speaks up, anybody who prays, and or nurses, there was a story that I saw last week of a Christian nurse who was turfed out of her job because she refused to say that men can be women and women could be men. So these are all extremely troubling signs, and it's hard to say which is the nail in the coffin, but it's certainly not, there's no culture of life anymore, really. I assume that in the countryside it might be different, but you know, even in the countryside, the elitists and the global blob are flooding even quaint little countryside towns in England and in Ireland with migrants, randy, excitable, single, 20-ish Muslim migrants. So I hate to be a downer so early in the program. Usually we're not downers until much later in the program, but Chris, you did ask, so that's, I think, where we're at. Okay, let's see. We have a Jewy question. It's Jew time. We have a question from Pooja M, who writes, "Dearest Laura, you have mentioned that you are busy preparing for Passover. Could you please talk a little bit about what is involved with your preparation for the holiday?" So thank you, Pooja, for that question. So Passover, the Passover Seder, the first Seder, if you are in the diaspora, there's only one Seder if you are in Israel, is Saturday night. So immediately following the Jewish Sabbath, which is Friday night to Saturday night, we roll right into Seder number one, which would be Saturday night. And there's a lot of prep that is involved. Cleaning, for example, is you have to remove any signs of leavened anything in your house. So any breads, breadcrumbs, cookies, you have to do a full cleaning of your kitchen according to very specific and rigorous standards. You switch out your dishes for Passover dishes, and you buy special products that have nothing leavened in them. And it's a one week festival, and it's actually profoundly moving. The Seder, the word Seder is Seder in Hebrew, and that means that there is an order to the telling of the story. So it's very moving that has been our story told since the Exodus, and there's lots of songs. The melodies and the words really harken back. I feel like it's in our genetic code, some of the melodies, and it's very familiar. And it promising to tell the story of the Exodus and our freedom from slavery. It's actually embedded into every part of Jewish life, and it is a weekly retelling. We thank God daily for our freedom. It's part of the kiddush, the sanctifying of the wine on the Sabbath. So it's a profoundly moving experience. If you guys haven't ever attended a Passover Seder and you can snag an invitation, it would be highly recommended by me. And I guess next week links, I will have a little Passover update for you guys. But yeah, there's a lot of prep. I guess most of you, all of you know that the Last Supper, this was a Seder. Anyways, it's a very, very lovely and fun holiday once you get over the cleaning and the shopping and the prep. So thank you so much, Pooja, for that question. Okay, we're going to move down a little bit. And we see, okay, oh, my special needs son is definitely out and about now. So we have a question from Angela Desso, who says, "Hi, Laura. Do you have any strong feelings one way or another about President Trump's tariffs? Do you think this is a good time to buy stocks? And if you do, if so, do you have any tips?" That's funny that you should mention that, because when I heard people talking about the fact that they thought that the stock market was going to crash entirely, I actually encouraged my kids to look up stocks that they might want to buy. I don't know, is that considered predatory or is it just common sense? But I don't, as far as I know, and I'm not too in the know, but I don't think there's been any actual crashes, have there, except for China. I think China, it would be good if China crashed entirely. Was it the Hong Kong stock market that dipped down 12%, something like that? Anyways, the best thing is today's story about the tariffs and just how President Trump has completely upped the ante. And, you know, his negotiation style is that it's just like throw a whole bunch of crazy spaghetti against the wall and see what noodles stick. And I love it. And, you know, Mark also has talked for many years about how, you know, America basically is funding communism. How? Because our America's and, well, North America's manufacturing base was completely transferred over to China, every single thing. And so the only reason that China can exist as a superpower is because we have collectively been subsidizing communism. Communism on its own, as Mark rightly has pointed out many times, cannot exist. It's make-believe. It's just all pretend. It's propped up. And like that, and that's what happened in the Soviet Union. There was nothing. It was an artificial system. It eventually imploded. Now, there's also a tremendous amount of pressure put on it by an incredible trio of leaders, which was the Pope and Margaret Thatcher and Ronald Reagan. Now, Trump is in an excellent position to be putting the screws to China, and it's wonderful to watch. And there's no reason why Americans should be subsidizing Chinese communism just to get cheap crap. So another person that I like to hear on this is Batya Unger Sargon. She speaks a lot about how the working class has been screwed over by the moving of manufacturing overseas, etc. So she's another a good voice on that. So I can't say I'm like pro tariffs one way or another against them, but I definitely think anything that reduces China's impact on the world and China's influence, that is a really good thing. Okay, let's see what else we've got here. We have a question now. Oh, and we are actually just about at our halfway mark. We are now at 3:28 p.m. Eastern Time, guys. Okay, let's see. We've got another, oh, we have another little, another question and comment from Olga again. So Olga, thanks again for another more lengthy comment. So we'll get to that right now. And Olga says, "Chag Pesach Sameach, Miss Laura. Tray impressed and grateful you could carve out time for the Q&A amidst last minute preparations. I can't remember if I've already weighed in on the tariffs, but at the risk of being redundant in the American sense, not the Commonwealth sense, I'm all in on punitive tariffs on our enemies, China, Russia, etc. I would add Turkey to that list, but it's a more nuanced conversation. As for friendlies, I see no point to tormenting them. We're never going to have trade parity with anyone. American appetites for consumption are more voracious, and we have more wealth and people to indulge them. Have a glorious celebration of freedom, Olga." Okay, there's actually quite a bit to unpack there. You definitely do not have to thank me for being here. Yes, it is busy, but I am really honored always to be able to warm up the host chair for Mark. And as I said, they're very busy having a wonderful time doing shows and having receptions and wine and appetizers and all the good things in Europe. So I'm happy to be here and honored, of course. I think you and I basically are seeing eye to eye on the tariffs that punish your enemies, definitely. And I agree with you that it's not the best strategy to punish your friends. I mean, most markets throughout the world are incidental compared to America. America is like the elephant, and all these other people, all these other countries are flies. But I think when Trump gets an idea into his head, he just hits people with everything that he's got. And that's part of his charm. That's part of the appeal, is the full-blown crazy throwing everything along with the kitchen sink at people. And then he waits and he waits. It's fun to watch, and he has great timing, and it's hysterical. So I don't know what they want out of this entirely. But the story is going to play out in the coming weeks, and we'll see. I think, and I've said before, I think I was going to say China-da, which is a bit of a Freudian slip, because that's actually what we are now in Canada. But Canada has played this out really badly, really stupidly, and I don't think that Pierre Poilievre or Doug Ford or anybody in Canada has handled this subject with any wisdom or any insight or grace. They really don't know how to handle Trump. I think it's been a gift to the Liberal Party. So Olga, basically you and I are simpatico. And I agree with you that Turkey is an enemy, and Qatar, for goodness sake. There's a lot of and I think and Iran, not that that's not that trade's an issue, it's more sanctions is an issue, but I think that it's a very good thing that China is uncomfortable. And like I said before, there's absolutely zero reason why America, of all countries, should be subsidizing China. Really, Mark's analysis on that was absolutely the right thing. And on principle, I remember Mark saying on a number of occasions that he refuses to buy Chinese mass-produced trinkets. Like, he was talking about decorating the Christmas tree one time, and even going into a small store in rural New Hampshire and trying to find some ornaments that were handmade. And when he realized that they were made in China, he flat out refused to buy them. So we don't need useless stuff. We don't need badly made trinkets and badly made appliances and badly put together garments. We need a shift in thinking, and I think it takes somebody like President Trump to get the ball rolling. So yeah, we'll see. I mean, it could mean a lot more economic freedom for the working class and the middle class in America. And truth be told, it's not that I don't think that Americans are necessarily addicted to cheap stuff, but there are a lot of manufacturers and business owners and elite rich people who are mostly the Democrats in America now, who are addicted to cheap labor. So I don't know if people are so into cheap stuff. I think people are generally willing to pay for quality products. That's my experience. People don't like getting ripped off. They don't like getting dinged, but they will pay for quality products. We have a throwaway culture, throwaway fashion, throwaway this, throwaway that. But I think that there are people who miss the days of being able to purchase, an appliance and knowing that it would last you like a decade or two, or cars lasting longer, well-made garments or coats or hats that would last longer. So not everybody's a throwaway fan. Anyways, like I said, the main thing is, if it hurts China, and Olga, as you have noted, if it hurts America's enemies, that is good enough for me right now. Okay, let us. I'm just going to take a little sip of water again. And my son is definitely stalking me a little bit. So if you guys hear anything in the background, you know that everything is okay and he is just making some of his tired little noises again. Okay, we're going to move along. We have a question from Nicola Timmerman. Nicola Timmerman says, any idea why Ireland is now so anti-Semitic? Not the old the Jews killed Jesus story, as they are not so religious anymore. Wish you were on this great cruise and got to talk to people like Sammy Woodhouse, Samantha Smith, and Anne McElhinney, who introduces Mark at the shows and should have been a stand-up comedian. Thank you, Nicola, for this question and for your comment. Mm-hmm. It is really kind of weird what is happening in Ireland right now. I've seen a lot of really crazy stories come out of Ireland, and yeah, a lot of blatant anti-Semitism. Like you say, normally I think an explanation, not an explanation, but like one of the reasons for that previously, I would have said maybe the influence of the Catholic Church perhaps, but it's, I'm a bit boggled by the intensity of the anti-Semitic stuff in Ireland now. And just like in other countries, I'm not sure why people are have taken such a full embrace of Palestinianism. And there is an alliance in Ireland of all these motley forces, the pro-immigrant, pro-migrant, you know, refugees welcome, have seamlessly blended with the embrace of radical Palestinianism and anti-Semitism. I personally obviously think it's a very toxic brew for any society to be dabbling in any of those things, really. And Ireland's in big trouble. There are several accounts that I follow. I think one guy's name is Michael O'Keefe, maybe, on X, and he posts a lot of incidents of migrants and sexual harassment, women being very afraid to walk the streets in Ireland. So again, it's not a good thing for Ireland, these things. So I don't really have a definitive answer for you about why. You know, there were a lot of philo-Semitic persons in Ireland. I was going to say Chaim Weizmann, but it's actually Chaim Herzog. The Herzog family, the president of Israel now is a Herzog, and their family is of rabbinic descent, Irish as well. So there's been better times and better relations, but I think when any country embraces the Palestinian cause as an identity, it just brings a toxic brew into the mix. So if there are any Irish listeners, do feel free to chime in, because it's something that I would be interested in hearing your analysis and opinion about. And as for the cruise, this would have, the timing for me and for other big Jews like myself is a crazy time. It would not have been conducive for me and my crew to be cruising before or during Passover. That's like not great timing. However, I am really glad that there are so many cool and interesting people that you guys get to meet and talk to, and the list of guests and VIPs is truly impressive. And obviously Mark has, well, we used to call it a Rolodex in the old days, but there's a lot of people who are fans of Mark's and friends who respect him tremendously, and I'm so glad that there is such a great mix of people, journalists, thought leaders, and intellectuals. And I'm glad you guys are having a great time, and definitely feel free to let us know how things are going on the ship. You can drop a comment into this thread, or tomorrow comment on the Laura's Links column, because that's usually like an open thread. And anybody who's on the cruise, definitely feel free to let us know what is going on there, how the shows are. Okay, let me do a quick refresh and we'll see if we've got any other questions coming along. Okay, we have a few. We have about 20 minutes left of our broadcast. We have a question from Dave Rogers, who says, Laura, as a Canadian, and Mark is a Canadian, what are you seeing in the news there about the second Trump administration writ the U.S.-Canada relationship? In the news here, we're seeing more stories about Canadians no longer wanting to vacation here, and Americans that vacation there are getting reprimanded. Any sage advice from our neighbor to the north? Well, you know, I don't have much sage advice as a neighbor to the north, because everything in Canada is completely cuckoo. And it has been, obviously, since Justin Trudeau, aka Justin Castro, took power. And Canadians are very silly. They're very immature. They like to whine about everything. Canadian identity, for as long as I can remember, was based on being not American. So I definitely have heard stories about, and personally, like, overheard people talking about how they don't want a vacation in America anymore, and la 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 la. I just don't take it very seriously at all, because I know that nothing's really changed for anybody. It's basically like nobody asked, nobody cared. Like, people are just making up these problems in their head, and I don't believe anybody who's changed their location. Anybody who was going to go to Florida for the winter is still going to go. Anybody who had travel plans is still going to go. I think it's like a bunch of baloney. But I don't know. I could be wrong about that. I think it's baloney. Okay, let's see what else we've got here. We've got Alyssa Angel, who says, what do you suppose the future of women's sports will be? Will it be eliminated altogether? Will it morph into an all men dressed as women spectacular? Alyssa, that is a very excellent question. And I think it's worth spending a little bit of time on this, because it's part of a larger discussion also on trans. So the future of women's sports, there will be no women's sports if we, the world, whatever, cannot collectively get enough backbone to keep the bipenist people, i.e. men, out of women's sports. So it's going to take a lot more guts on the part of female athletes and the coaches and the parents and the schools. Again, I put a lot of blame on coaches and the men coaches, male coaches especially, but all coaches. Nobody should submit their athletes to this kind of humiliation. There are signs that it is changing slowly. There are in the news pretty regularly stories now of girls and women who are refusing to participate in the charade. And that is a better thing to do. That takes more guts to be public about it, because the men who we see stories about participating in the women's stuff, whether it's rugby or swimming or I think it was snooker or pool last week as well, they don't have any shame. They have no shame, and you can't shame the shameless. So it's a better and more courageous thing for the girls and women to take the knee and not participate, to refuse to. That's good press. That shines a lot of light on the situation. Whereas the men who are pictured doing the sports against women, they don't really care. They walk away with the prize money. They have zero qualms about anything. And also there's the autogynephilic element of it. And I think that that's really where the discussion has to go in order to make more progress on driving a stake through the heart of trans. And I think that also a lot of gays and lesbians and bisexuals, so like the LGB community, I've said for a long time, they have to drop the T. The T's cannot be part of that movement. They're wrecking it for the LGs and the Bs. Never mind the question marky apostrophe plus two spirit, blah, 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 blah. A lot of this movement, I think it's a mostly male fetish community. They like, it's like a turn on for them. They like humiliating women. They like hurting women. They like invading women's spaces. So as it happens, the most dangerous thing nowadays to women are men, surprisingly enough, who want to hurt women. And all this has to be put into the context of, you know, like radical leftists and Marxists and cultural Marxists who want to destroy all norms, all civilizational norms, and all norms of Western behavior and of traditional sexual normal behavior. So, and they want to bring things to the predatory side, to the pedophilia side, and to normalize a lot of very disturbing behavior. So I think if we want to make more progress on killing the trans / woke ideology, whether it's in sports or in change rooms or anywhere, in schools, in teaching, we have to be a lot more bold and forthcoming about the predatory fetish nature of the men who are most actively involved in claiming to be trans. And we can just call it not. So trans women, not woman. You're a man. And we have to be honest about it and be willing to take our lumps, because the left still controls a lot of the culture and a lot of education and a lot of the media. So people have to be prepared to get out there, to tell the truth, and to take the lumps that come with it. So excellent, excellent comment / question. Thanks, Alyssa, for that. Okay, we have time for a few more little bits and pieces. Maybe you guys are getting ready for your own nap time. I don't know. Okay, let's see what we've got here. We've got a question from San Diego Linda. So San Diego Linda writes, with all the news this week, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu was at the White House again this week, his second visit to the U.S. since Trump took office. What was your biggest takeaway from this latest meeting, and in brackets, ceasefire, tariffs, regional stability? That's a very good question. Thank you, San Diego Linda. And I definitely was surprised and a little bit caught off guard that Netanyahu was invited again to come to the White House. I agree that it's kind of like a big thing to be invited so fast after the first visit, and he was the first foreign leader who was invited to the White House by President Trump, and that was a huge spectacle of America-Israel friendship. It was quite extraordinary. So I don't know, and I've been reading stuff in the Israeli papers as well, and I haven't really been able to pinpoint what the main reason is. I imagine that the issues that you raise, ceasefire, excuse me, tariffs and regional stability and Gaza and the hostages, that those things are all on the agenda. And I think Trump has made some, again, very, very masterful comments about Gaza again this time around, and how, you know, Israel vacated Gaza, and that was actually like strategically a mistake, and what has Israel gained from it? Trump's willing to say all these things and to like burst the bubble of the what all the precious people and all the party people say. He just goes right for the jugular and hits people with truth bombs. Now, the other thing that's happening politically, I'm just going to grab a sip of water one sec, to Netanyahu is this massive, massive assault, continuous and unending assault on Netanyahu by the Israeli deep state. So that's what's going on in the background, just domestically. And I'm not really sure. It's certainly something that Trump and Netanyahu have in common, to be the subject of constant assaults and lawfare and trials and fake news by the leftist establishment, who hate both of them. And it's really hit in Israel quite a boiling point, because, so first of all, in Israel, there was an attempt to scale back the judicial junta that is really in charge in Israel. It's not really the Knesset, not the elected representatives of the people. It's not really the Likud government with a majority. It's the judicial junta, which was started by an extremely awful human called, this is why I shouldn't bring up these subjects unless I've had a nap. The former president of the Israeli Supreme Court instituted basically a legal revolution. And he's pretty much been calling for a civil war in Israel, saying like, yeah, it's okay if we spill blood. These are big, important things, because the junta doesn't want their power to be taken away from them. So when the prime minister of Israel tried to make legal reforms and rein some of this in, that's when people started hitting the streets, because they were worried that if there were going to be reforms to the legal system, that the left would essentially lose its deep-rooted, deep state power. So now that disunity in Israel was something that Hamas was noticing, and was one of the factors in their decision-making to launch an attack on Israel, when they thought that a civil war was brewing and that reservists wouldn't show up and pilots wouldn't show up. So that kind of anti-Netanyahu jihad, basically, by the leftist deep state in Israel, had big consequences, existential and lethal consequences for Israel. And now the next phase of that is that Netanyahu wanted to remove the head of the GSS, the Shabak, in Hebrew, the General Security Services, this character named Ronen Bar. And the left are defending this guy as if he is like the holiest of holy, has never done anything wrong. And in fact, Ronen Bar, his name is coming up a lot in the reports and the analysis of the colossal intelligence failures of October 7th. It was on his watch that October 7th happened. So most of the normal people in Israel are like, yeah, you screwed up, buddy. Admit you made an error, go away quietly or whatever, resign, goodbye, go home. The former chief of the military staff also left his post very quietly before a lot of this SH, you know what, T has hit the fan in Israel. So right now, Netanyahu is spending many hours, instead of leading the war efforts, he's been in court. He was trying to get rid of the attorney general, who is anti-Netanyahu, and the head of the GSS, Ronen Bar. It's really awful, and it's a big struggle. So I think I have a couple of articles on it in the links, but if anybody else is interested in this colossal deep state jihad in Israel, I can include a little bit more about it in an upcoming edition of the links. But it's something that certainly the two leaders have in common, and I don't know if that was on their agenda, but certainly in order to get any closer to victory in this war and in Gaza, I think Ronen Bar has to go. And it's pretty ugly, and like I said, basically this Israel in many ways is run by just a gangster cabal of judicial activists. Okay, on that happy note, we have time for a couple of more questions or comments before we bring things to a close. And I see that Alyssa Angel has ducked right back into the comments with her own note about naps. So we are going to get Alyssa's take on naps as well. And we'll see if anybody else has nap head. And she says, naps are great, so are heating pads and instant coffee. Those are all things I associate with my grandparents. Okay, so we're on the same wavelength about the naps. And I think I cut off for a minute if you guys lost me. I hope that everybody can hear me okay now. Instant coffee. I cannot say that I am a big fan of instant coffee. I'm not a full coffee snob, Alyssa, but I definitely don't think that instant coffee would be on my list of good things. But yes, it is sort of a grandparent thing. Did anybody else have grandparents who put the sewing stuff in one of those cookie tins? You know, the blue cookies? Are they Danish? Or the Scrabble pieces? Maybe this is a Canadian thing, but did you guys put your Scrabble pieces in Crown Royale in those purple, the purple little felt bottles that came with the liquor? Anyways, I'm definitely getting like flashbacks to my childhood. There was a lot of other things that don't exist anymore, like the red velour velveteen kind of wallpaper that they had in my grandparents' house as well. I do have a little bit of reminiscence about my grandparents coming up in tomorrow's links, if you are interested. A little bit of an anecdote based on a culinary delicacy that was very common in our Ashkenazi Polish Jewish Bibi and Zadie house. It's not for the faint-hearted, and if you want more information, you will have to check out the links tomorrow. So I'm going to take one more little quick look into our back end and see if anybody has any more questions or comments before we call it a night. It has been a pleasure, as always, to be guest hosting. I do love liberating the mic from Mark whenever I get a chance. It is actually really an honor to be able to speak to you guys and to talk to you. And once again, I will take this opportunity of encouraging you to check out any posts that come out on Mark's own X feed. Lots of little bits coming out about the cruise. We will have shows posted, like I said, in the days and weeks to come. And I would also encourage you, I know, as I said, everybody can listen to this broadcast completely free of charge, no matter where you are around the planet. But if you would like to drop questions in, or if you would like to comment on any of the many articles and essays and columns that come online at Stein Online, do consider getting a membership in the club. You will not regret it. You can do a trial membership as well for a shorter period than a year if you would like. And I highly recommend it. Like I said, there's people from all over the world who are in the club, and there's lots of interesting discussions. And I think actually that quite a number of people have become friends, even offline, from meeting one another virtually in the club. So do check that out. And any people who are listening from the cruise, just keep enjoying yourselves. We are all very happy you are together, and hopefully we will get some information even in the coming months about the next cruise. And I think that with no more questions coming up, I am going to call it an afternoon. And I really appreciate the opportunity, hoping that all the cruisers are having a fabulous time. And like I said, if there's anything that we didn't get to that you wanted to discuss, any comments, you can feel free to send an email to the club, to the general mailbox, Mark Stein Club. You can email me, just my full name, Laura Rosen Cohen, at gmail.com. You can also find me on X. You can find Mark, obviously, on X too. And that is it for this live Q&A around the planet. Thank you for joining us on this fabulous April afternoon, and we will see you once again next week for another live Q&A. Take care of yourselves, and I look forward to sharing a fresh batch of Laura's links with you tomorrow. Take care, guys.